the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
We're delighted to be joined on the Culture Club today by the actor Frank Blake. You may have seen him in loads of things, particularly when he was the brother in Normal People, and he's been in various other TV roles and movies. But he also is a man who takes the stage, and he will soon be in The Abbey for The Boy, which is a two-part theatrical event, an epic work by Marina Carr, which starts in The Abbey on the 15th of September and runs until the 1st of November. Tell us a little bit about it, Frank.
The Boy is Marina's adaptation of the Theban plays. So there's three Theban plays, Oedipus Rex, Oedipus Colonus and Antigone, the Sophocles plays. And Marina has adapted them into two plays, which you can choose to see over separate nights. Or on Wednesdays and Saturdays, two show days, you can come and see them all together in a one marathon event. And they follow Oedipus from his origin, and Marina very much stretches out the myth to its very origin, which you wouldn't normally see, right to his end with Antigone and beyond. Yeah.
Is this a demanding role for you?
It is, certainly, yeah. It's the most challenging thing I've done, which I'm relishing, but yeah, it's something to rise to for sure.
And you're in it with Eileen Walsh and others.
Yeah, we have an amazing cast. Eileen, who's incredible, I've seen her in so many things over the years, and most recently, The Second Woman. I don't know if you heard about that, a 24-hour piece that she did, which was amazing. And then we've got lots of greats, such as Jane Brennan and Alwyn Ferreira and Frank McCusker and so many more.
Okay, well, let's get to your Culture Club choices, because I'm fascinated by many of them, given that you're a young man, but you have a lot of interests in music and other things that goes back from long before you were born.
Yeah, I don't know where that came about. The lads in Druid, I worked with Druid before, and they used to take the mick out of me, asking me if I'd collect my pension on the way into rehearsals.
Because of the stuff you like, is it?
Yeah, or just they think I'm an outlaw or something, I don't know.
Well, hang on, you're not even 30 yet, are you?
I am, yeah.
You've just passed it,
yeah,
are you?
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know, I've always had an interest in older things, and particularly the 60s and 70s, yeah.
We'll get to it. Your first choice, though, we asked for first single, or depending on the age of the guest, album you've ever bought, and you think the first thing you can remember getting is Eminem's Curtain Call.
Which would go against everything we've just said. Yeah.
Would.
But yeah, I think so. I mean, I think when I started getting into music, it was when you could like pass around albums and stuff and you could just put them on your computer. But the first one I think I remember buying maybe was that. I don't know how I would have bought it, because I don't think they should be selling Eminem Curtain Call to 10-year-olds.
Was that how young you were at the time?
I think so. I think so, yeah. So I was obsessed with Eminem when I was younger, and I was trying to figure out why, like, what was the obsession with that? I think everyone was, but I guess it was like the silly voices, and he played characters in his songs, and there was an element of satire and maybe even social commentary there. Maybe I'm really stretching there to justify this choice.
You were thinking all of that as a 10-year-old.
yeah, obviously. no, I was definitely the silly voices. But yeah, it was mad about Eminem when I was a kid.
So was Seamus Heaney, apparently. Let's hear a little bit Eminem and Dido when doing Stan from Curtain Call.
But you still ain't calling. I left my cell, my pager, and my home phone at the bottom. I sent two letters back in autumn. You must not have got them. There probably was a problem at the post office or something. Sometimes I scribble addresses too sloppy when I jot them. But anyways, what's been up, man? How's your daughter? My girlfriend's pregnant too. I'm about to be a father. If I have a daughter, guess what I'ma call her? I'ma name her Bonnie. I read about your Uncle Ronnie too, I'm sorry. I had a friend self over some bitch who didn't want him. I know you probably hear this every day, but I'm your biggest fan. I even got the underground shit that you did with Scam.
I got a room full of your posters and your pictures, man. I like the shit you did with Rockets too. That shit was bad. Anyways, I hope
it's still as brilliant as it was at the time when it came out.
Yeah, I mean, I hadn't even thought of that one, that Stan. But yeah, it's like he's telling a story there. He's playing a character, and yeah, I thought it was amazing. Did you say Seamus Heaney?
Seamus Heaney apparently was a big fan of Eminem, yeah.
No way.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Well then.
So there's an endorsement
me
for
and
you.
Heaney, yeah.
It is dark, whereas against your favourite album is possibly brilliantly light, isn't it?
Yeah, we're taking a U-turn here. I love Pet Sounds, and I'm sure you get this selection a lot.
A bit.
Yeah.
A bit, but
yeah.
Usually with people a lot older than you.
Yeah, I think I always liked the Beach Boys, and then, yeah, just discovered this as an album. I think maybe with our generation, we don't listen to albums as much. We just like get bits of songs, and Spotify spits out random tracks at us. Whereas this is like something I feel like I have to listen to the whole way through. And there's such a through line there, and there's kind of a lot of albums feels like there's sort of B-side filler on it or something, whereas this has got such a through line, and it kind of cost him so much as a person to make it, I feel like, and he was really trying to reinvent the sound of the time. And Brian Wilson, he's incredible. I love the movie Love and Mercy. Did you see that?
No.
I think it's kind of in two different timelines. One is when he's recording Pet Sounds, and later in life than when he's sort of on the decline in his health, which is very sad, and you see the full cost of his younger years maybe, and then yeah, it's very sad to lose him recently.
Let's have a little bit of from the album Pet Sounds by the Beach Boys. This is God Only Knows.
Love you, but long as there are stars above you, you never need to doubt it. I'll make you so sure about it. God only knows what I'd be without you. If you should ever leave me, well, life would still go on, believe me. The world could show nothing to me, so what good would living do me? God only knows what I'd be without you.
Beautiful track, God Only Knows, by the Beach Boys from Pet Sounds. Now, we asked you for a favourite band or artist, and you've given us Martin Hayes and The Gloaming, and Martin actually sat in that seat previously to do the Culture Club. So, traditional Irish music, tell us about your interest in this.
Again, it was something I came to kind of only in the last 10 years or so. I wasn't into it growing up.
Despite growing up in County Clare?
Despite growing up 2 miles away from Martin Hayes. It didn't really interest me as much. I don't know, maybe I was too busy listening to Eminem or something. But I saw The Gloaming when they kind of first came about. They used to do like gigs in the National Concert Hall, and that's when I really, really got into it, and I started going to see Martin Hayes and Dennis Cahill, and then Martin Hayes in as many different iterations. I think he's the person I've seen most out of any artist ever. I think I've seen him like 10 or 12 times, and I would go see him anytime he plays. He only saw him a few weeks ago in London, and he's had so many different iterations with The Gloaming and the Common Ground Ensemble and the Quartet with Dennis. And
but what's dragged you into the music belatedly?
I don't know, maybe it's moving away from home and actually feeling like that's bringing you back or transporting you back home in a way. And Martin's music is very much of East Clare, and he says himself he plays in an East Clare style, and I think that must be it. Yeah. And watching him play is kind of hypnotic. He transports you somewhere else, and he could play, and then you realise 40 minutes have passed and you think it's only like 5 or 6 minutes, and yeah, it feels like you're watching Jimi Hendrix play guitar or something like that.
The Gloaming, Sorrow, Sorrow.
Sorrow, sorrow, bang in the morning. Hogamer fain and sorrow ling. Sorrow, queen and no need legal. Hogamer fain and sorrow ling. Hogamer ling, oh, he'll crave. Hogamer fain and sorrow ling. Sorrow, queen, all in the grain. Hogamer fain and sorrow ling. Bob og na belt and a maid and a tauri. So as gach look as she's gach clown. Kalini mashach upon gilig legal. Hogamer fain and sorrow ling.
The Gloaming, Sorrow, Sorrow. Frank Blake, the number of people who've come into us saying the best gig they've ever at was their first gig, and you've gone for your first gig. Tell us about it.
My first ever gig, when I was 15, I saw Bruce Springsteen in the RDS with my friend Juan in 2009. I think it was the Working on a Dream tour. And I just could not believe what I was seeing. We got a lift up from Clare that morning, and I just couldn't believe, like, there was a, he was there. The guy I'd seen pictures of and I had CDs of was on the stage, and he was actually singing all the songs, and he had the suntan and the white teeth and the jeans, and he played for, you know, as he does, 3.5 hours or whatever. And I was just blown away by it. I couldn't believe it. Yeah.
You'd long been a fan of the music as well, had you?
I had, yeah. I had. My friend Juan, who I mentioned, used to give me his albums, his Bruce albums from his dad. So I had them all on my little iPod, whatever I had at the time. And I still am a fan. Yeah, you almost feel obliged to go see him whenever he plays.
And is it still the same for you? Is it as good each time you go?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, nothing is as good as the first time I saw him, because it was just mind blowing. And we queued up for hours as well. Like, we queued up for 7 or 8 hours to get right up the front. And we did. Juan got a high five off him and everything.
And were you at the age where you didn't have to have a drink to go to a concert as well?
Yeah. We just had ham sandwiches in tinfoil in our back pockets, and that fueled us for the night.
Let's hear a little bit. We've got a bit of fan footage from that RDS show in 2009. Oh, wow. So the audio isn't brilliant, but it just gives you an indication. This was Bruce Springsteen singing Hungry Heart. Bruce Springsteen, who knows how to put on a show and puts everything into it.
Yeah. A lot of sweat.
Okay. That wasn't Hungry Heart either, but anyway.
I think he just, like, that's what blew me away as well. He just takes signs out of the crowd and just plays the songs, whatever's on the sign.
Let's go to more of your choices, and let's get to the acting. And give us a favourite movie, please.
Hard one. Very hard one, but I think it's There Will Be Blood, directed by Paul Thomas Anderson.
Who's also your favourite director.
Yes. So, I love that film. It's epic in scale, and it's like a Western, and it's so, like, greasy, and obviously there's a lot of oil in there. And it's got amazing actors. I mean, Daniel Day-Lewis gives one of the great performances ever. And I think Paul Dano, I think that was one of the first times we'd properly seen Paul Dano. playing the dual role of the Sunday Twins, and our own Ciarán Hinds as well, who is fantastic in it. And I just, yeah, just the visuals of the film and the scope of the whole thing is amazing. Yeah.
Let's hear a bit from There Will Be Blood. Daniel Plainview, played by Daniel Day-Lewis, negotiates with the Sunday family about buying their ranch.
What is it that brought you here, sir? The good Lord's guidance. Now, of course, within that, we're going to develop a lease. What's that?
What about our oil?
What about it?
We have oil here. That's worth something.
Oh, do you have someone who can drill for it? Do you think there's oil here?
I know there is.
Oh, it's very expensive to drill. You know, to get it up and out of the ground. You ever tried that before?
How much is it?
Costly.
Well, our oil sits right up on top of the ground.
I believe that's called seepage. Doesn't necessarily mean there's anything underneath.
What would you give us for it?
I don't know.
Something you don't know.
That's right. What would you like, Eli?
$10,000.
For what?
For my church.
That's good. That's a good one. Well, if we decide to drill for oil, and if the well begins to produce, I'll give your church a $5,000 signing.
$10,000.
Do you want to find someone else that's going to come up here and drill, Eli? Make the investment and all the hard work that goes into it? I can just as easily hunt for quail on another ranch as I can here, so... No, I'll happily be a supporter of your church for as long as I can. For the bonus only.
I'm going to go back and watch that movie again. Yeah, so good.
So good. Actually, I read an article recently in The Guardian, so I'm fully aware of how we sound here, that it was a woman had written this article saying she is so sick of having men explain There Will Be Blood to her on first dates. I'm aware what it means to pick that as my favourite film.
Your actor choice is a great one, though, because he's in such a range of movies and is brilliant in everything he's done. Philip Seymour Hoffman, the late Philip Seymour Hoffman. As an actor, why did you pick him out?
Just, he's just different in every single thing, and there doesn't seem to be any ego or vanity about it at all. Like, I saw Boogie Nights in the cinema a couple of weeks ago, and he just always surprises you as well when you watch old films from the 90s or whatever. I saw Talented Mr. Ripley for the first time, and he's this like suave guy in it, but he's also brings something that no one else could have brought to it, and I don't think you would have ever cast him on paper for that part. And then in Boogie Nights, he's that like, strange character working behind the scenes, and then in something like The Master, then Paul Thomas Anderson's film, he's so much different again. And I don't think we are seeing actors like that as much anymore. Truly, truly transformative actors, for whatever reason. And yeah.
Would you aspire to having his sort of abilities?
Oh, who wouldn't? Yeah, he's amazing. Yeah. I could only aspire.
Tell us about that. You gave us a list as well of Irish actors, many of whom you've worked with, who also are inspirations to you.
Yeah, I think it would be remiss of me to omit some of like the great Irish theatre actors I've worked with, I'm so lucky to be working with Eileen here in this. I've seen her in loads of things over the years. And Marty Ray, I've worked with on a couple of things before. The likes of Erin Monaghan, Ashley McGuckin, I've worked with a few times. And being in rehearsal rooms with them, I feel like has really shaped me as an actor and kind of laid the foundations for me to do the best work I can.
Well, in coming to your favourite play or musical or theatre show, how did you get into acting?
I went to university, I went to NUIG for a year and got into Dramsoc there and spent a lot more time in Dramsoc than I did in lectures. And then I quickly dropped out, yeah, after my first year to go to the Lear Academy here in Dublin. And yeah, that was my beginning there. There wasn't much to do in Clare, where I'm from. There wasn't many drama groups or anything like that. So I was a late starter.
So tell us about your favourite plays. You've given us three, actually. The first one, Motive and the Cue. What's that?
The Motive and the Cue is a play about John Gielgud, who is very much a theatre stalwart of the 40s, 50s, directing Richard Burton, film star, in Hamlet on Broadway. I forget when the production was, but it's a brilliant clash of sort of Gielgud's theatrical old school sensibilities and Richard Burton's kind of film star lifestyle. He just married Elizabeth Taylor. She's a character in the play.
He was fond of a drink.
It goes into that too. And it's sort of a clash of their sensibilities, but also a melding of them as well, because you see that they're very, very alike, but their lives have just taken them in different directions. And
or having come from very different places originally, probably, as well. Burton was from the mines in Wales, wasn't he?
Yes, yeah. And it goes into all of that, and he kind of digs into that of like why he wants to do this, why he wants to do Hamlet and prove to everyone that he can do this thing. And I went to see it 3 times, which I've never, ever done for a play. And it's just kind of a lot of actor friends I know went to see it a lot of times because it kind of reignites the love for theatre in you. Yeah.
And then another one that I wasn't familiar with, and I wouldn't mind actually seeing, given my own personal interest, the Lehman Trilogy.
Yeah, also directed by Sam Mendes, as was The Motive of the Cue. I didn't think I was going to love it as much as I did. I was kind of hungover and I went to see this play about the founding and story of a bank. And I was gone.
Which famously crashed in 2008 and almost took the world economy with it.
Yes, exactly. And does anyone want to see that? But actually, it was amazing.
Why?
So the first scene is actually everyone standing around the table listening to the radio, and they announce the Lehman Brothers bank has fallen. And then it goes all the way back to the three Lehman Brothers, played by Simon Russell Beale, Adam Godley and Ben Miles, landing on presumably Ellis Island, I think, way back when in the 18-somethings. And it tracks the whole history of the Lehman Bank from that, the founding back then, all the way through. The three actors play several different iterations of Lehman family members and employees of the bank, politicians, whoever. It's a real actor's play. I feel like there's a lot of silly voices and silly walks going on. And those actors were incredible. It was 3.5 hours long. And when the curtain went down, I was like, I'll watch that again right now.
Okay. And your third choice is Tom Murphy's work, A Whistle in the Dark.
Yeah. I saw A Whistle in the Dark. It was actually the week I was auditioning for drama school and I was real stuck for a monologue for my final round audition, and I saw this play and went, I'll have that. And it was the Druid production when they did the Druid Murphy cycle probably 12 or 13 years ago now. And that was my first time seeing loads of actors who I've just mentioned, like Marty and Eileen, Rory Nolan, Aaron Monaghan, Garrett Lombard, Marie Mullen, all these people. And I loved it. I love Tom's work. Really speaks to me and kind of the part of the world I'm from. And I think he really held up a mirror to Irish society that was kind of showed the uglier side of it and wasn't afraid to show that. Incredible play.
Okay, let's go on to favourite books and authors. We've already mentioned Seamus Heaney, and you actually have his letters in there as a book that you're reading at the moment.
Yeah. I picked it up in a shop recently and I flicked to the last page, and his last words to his wife were beautiful. I think it was Nolo Temere, which is don't be afraid in Latin, which he texted her, which, it was really, really touching. And I just had to pick up the book after that. And they're all his letters from something like the 60s up to his final years. And it's a great sort of peek inside his mind. And I found it very demystifying as well. Like he's, as you just mentioned, he listens to Eminem, so he said. And that all these kind of great minds that you think are so beyond us are actually very like us, and they have the same worries and anxieties as all of us. Yeah.
And then for author, you've mentioned John McGahern and his book Amongst Women. Why have you picked this?
I read it about a year ago now. I only read some of his... I read it about a year ago, and I'd read some of his other works, but this one really, really spoke to me. And again, like I mentioned with Tom Murphy, he shows a real darker side of the Irish psyche and society. And I mean, I could see why, or I could understand why people might have wanted to censor him back in the day, because some of the stuff he's writing about is really shocking. And that was in the 60s. And even with my modern lens and perspective on it, I'm still like really taken aback by what he's writing about and uncovering, which I think was the most important part of it for sure.
Let's hear a little bit. This is actually from the TV series adapted from the book Amongst Women. This is a bit where, as Michael's health deteriorates, he pens a letter to his son Luke.
I want to write a letter.
Of course, Daddy. Who to?
I know that Luke feels I've done him some wrong or harm. I want to put it right.
Michael, you know that's not true. Luke always took things too personally. I mean, there are differences in every family, but no one pays them heed the way he does.
I want him to know I have nothing against him. If I write him that, at least I'll feel the fault won't be mine. It won't be in my conscience. There are times in my life when I have pondered my sanity. Things have been done that cannot be undone. My life is now too short to keep a grudge. Let me say, I had no wish to harm you in the past, and I have no wish to harm you in the future. And if I have done so, I'm sorry. The daffodils are in bloom, also shrubs and fruit. Why is it that in the prime of life we never notice the amazing beauty that surrounds us? I'm tired now, Daddy.
That was John McGahern's Amongst Women. Favourite TV show? I'm laughing at this because we asked what you loved as a child and teenager, and Breaking Bad seems so recent, but it actually isn't quite that recent. But I suppose many people have watched it again and again via streaming. What was it about Breaking Bad that you recall that?
Just the journey he goes on from sort of Mr. Chips to Scarface. I really, really loved it. And I guess I was familiar with Bryan Cranston from Malcolm in the Middle, which maybe that's what I should have put down for when I was a kid. And to see him play this character and start out as almost as Hal from Malcolm in the Middle and then turn into Walter White, or what did he call himself? Walt Whitman. No.
No, Walter White.
Walter White, sorry. Yeah. He took it from Walt. Anyway, it's the only show, I think, that and Chernobyl, which I've also mentioned, they're the only two shows I've ever rewatched properly. And I found Breaking Bad better on the rewatch, because you can't believe what the first season is when you know already where it's gone.
Let's hear a little bit from Breaking Bad, where Walter White meets Gustavo Fring for the first time.
I don't think we're alike at all, Mr. White. You are not a cautious man at all. Your partner was late, and he was high.
Yes. Yes, he was.
He's high often, isn't he? You have poor judgment. I can't work with someone with poor judgment.
Are you familiar with my product?
I've been told it's excellent.
It is impeccable. It is the purest, most chemically sound product on the market anywhere.
That is not the only factor.
You could charge twice the current rate for what I provide, and your customers would pay it, hands down. Who I choose to do business with on my end is not your problem. You won't see him. You won't interact with him. Forget he exists.
I have to ask. Why? Why him?
Because he does what I say. Because I can trust him.
How much product do you have on hand?
38 pounds. Ready to go at a moment's notice. Will I hear from you?
I have your numbers. You can never trust a drug addict.
That's Breaking Bad. And Frank, did you ever watch Better Call Saul?
I did, yes, yeah.
For the intersection with Breaking Bad.
Yeah, yeah, they had that one episode towards the end, yeah. Heisenberg, that's what I was trying to think about, his other name, Heisenberg, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was brilliant. You also mentioned Chernobyl, which is a classic five-parter, but more recently Slow Horses, I believe you're a fan of.
Yes, who isn't? It's brilliant. I love Gary Oldman in it. Is such a greaseball. He's fantastic. And the writing is so sharp. It's so slick looking. I love Jack Loudon in it as well. He's hilarious in it, but also carrying the weight of the world on his shoulders. And all the guest stars they get in and everything are brilliant.
And just for you love The Traitors, I believe, as well.
I love The Traitors. That is one of the best shows I've ever seen, just as a sort of a psychological experiment. It's so, so good. And I cannot wait for the Irish version coming soon, I believe. I hope.
It is coming soon. Look, just to finish off, we asked for a buried treasure and you've gone back to the 60s, early 70s. I'm trying to remember exactly what the date would be in this. But you've fallen in love with something an older generation would know, the concert movie of The Last Waltz. Why?
I saw it recently for the first time, only about a month or two ago. And again, I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe I hadn't seen this thing. I kind of heard of it and I was kind of aware of the band a little bit. Like I knew their tunes, but it's amazing. It's sort of redefines how a concert film should be and redefined how it could be, certainly at the time. And it's got that real slick Scorsese feel to it. It's got all the panning shots and these sweeping shots and he's in it himself, and it tells the story. It has a real narrative through line as well. Like it kind of tells the story of sort of the fraternity kind of breaking up almost and crumbling. And it does so with the set, even like the Winterland Theatre where they played it is crumbling. All these guest stars they have, like Van Morrison, Bob Dylan, Joni Mitchell. Incredible, incredible film.
That's where we'll finish with. We'll play a little bit of the night they drove old Dixie down.
Like my father before me, I've overworked the land. And like my brother above me, who took a rebel stand. He was just 18, proud and brave. But a Yankee, a lady in his grave. And I swear by the blood below my feet, you can't.
From the band, from The Last Waltz. Frank Blake, it has been great meeting you. Thank you so much for coming into us. And best luck in the Abbey with The Boy from the 15th of September.
The Last Word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.